Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. It's good to be with you today. I'm one of your hosts for today, Ursula Rudenberg, together with my co-host, Susan Franson. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Ursula, and hello to you, listener.
As we get started, let's check in with the phenology calendar, as usual, with the natural world. Phenology calendar tracks the unfolding of the plants and animal world according to the days of the year. According to it, the cardinal started singing its mating call the 1st of February. We're a bit late in the month to be talking about cardinals, and I know you mentioned the cardinal last week, Susan.
Yes, I did.
But the cardinal is just such a big part of our world here in Central Iowa for so many ways, and its call is such a hopeful sound. I really just wanted to loop back one more time and give these bright red guys a real moment on Local Talk to weigh in on the subject of spring. Especially with all this cold weather, who doesn't need to hear the cardinal's voice? So let's listen to what the Cornell University Lab of Ornithology for Study and Appreciation and Conservation of Birds has to say about the cardinal.
The northern cardinal, for many of us, is that first blaze of color after a long winter. They begin to sing in the late winter, early spring, and you see that male cardinal dashing across your yard to take up a post and sing its brilliant whistled song. The song of a cardinal is actually fairly simple. It's a series of whistled syllables. Usually each song is comprised of one to two, sometimes three syllable types. One component of a cardinal's song that often goes overlooked, but if you listen carefully, you can actually hear, is a chirr or purring that occurs at the end of the song. And it's much softer than the actual whistled notes, and they don't always give it. A female northern cardinal is as adept as a male at singing. Often this goes overlooked because we assume it's only the males that sing. But if you listen carefully, if you watch, you may actually see and hear a female singing. Humans use their voice box to produce sound. We're only able to produce one sound at a time. Birds use another type of organ called the syrinx, and it's located right where the two bronchial tubes come up from each lung. It's a paired structure. It has two sides to it that are equivalent in their ability to generate sound. And a bird actually can produce one sound on the left side and another independent sound on the right side. When a cardinal sings a beautiful upward-sweeped whistle, it's actually using the left side to produce the lower portion of that whistle, and without any obvious break to us as human beings, it produces the higher pitched portion of that whistle with the right side. Just amazing physiology involved in sound production. To see a flash of red, and then these fantastic bursts of clear whistled song. It's one of those invigorating things that signals the transition from late winter into early spring.
What we just heard was, of course, the cardinal. Narration was provided by Cornell University Lab of Ornithology. You heard the voice of their library curator, Greg Budney. The Cornell Lab has existed since 1915 and is a nonprofit organization of bird enthusiasts of all ages and walks of life. We thank them for this report.
How could anybody resist that beautiful sound? It lets us know deep down that spring really is coming.
Well, I'm glad the cardinal is singing to give us hope, because we still have a ways to go. It is is going to continue being cold. Snow is predicted for today, and temperatures above 20 degrees are not predicted yet during this coming week.
March comes in like a lion, right? Okay, so we're still experiencing the lion.
Ursula and I spoke with climatologist Elwin Taylor in the wake of last week's storm and asked him about all this cold weather. We also spoke to a number of local residents on Friday's Local Talk about their own memories of blizzards and extreme weather.
We want to play some of those conversations again for you. We're hoping that if we give Old Man Winter a last tribute, maybe he will just start getting the hint and start wrapping things up.
Yes.
I think we appreciated him enough.
Right. Maybe if we acknowledge him, he'll feel okay about saying goodbye.
Exactly. So let's listen in. Elwin, I've always been told the weather comes from the west. Did this storm come from the west?
The disturbance does come from the west or from the northwest, depending on the time of year. And, of course, this one did, as usual. And right now, the storm itself, is the center of it, is in Michigan and adjacent Canada, just east of Michigan. And the tail of it, you might say, is all the way down into the Gulf of Mexico.
Well, of course, what we're most interested in is what we're going to experience in the next few days, and I bet you know what that will be.
One of the interesting forecasts that we have is bitterly cold Arctic air. That is being forecast. You could watch it on the Weather Channel, I think, and they would be talking about it, but going mostly into Michigan, adjacent Canada, and then maybe down into New York and Pennsylvania. And that would be considered by them to be Arctic air or bitterly cold Arctic air. And if indeed this does happen for the 48 states, we would call it polar outbreak number 9. On a normal winter, we will get polar air into the Midwest or into the northeastern U.S. maybe twice. On a harsh winter, we would get it 6 or 7 times. We've had 8 polar outbreaks this winter with the sub-zero temperatures coming into Iowa, and so that qualifies this as a harsh winter.
We didn't get any good news from you. What we're going to be talking about later are weather anomalies, things that we really didn't expect. Now, of course, we didn't expect 9 polar outbreaks this year. We'll be talking about the blizzard of 1973, which was spectacular because it was the April blizzard. You said you weren't here then, but you could explain why we would have such a late blizzard.
I was not living in Iowa at that time. I did not move my residence to Iowa until 1979. During this period of time that you're speaking of, I was in Alabama as a forecaster and an agricultural meteorologist for the National Weather Service and watching very carefully what was going on all through the agricultural areas of the United States. When the trees come out in leaf in the springtime, usually the first ones we see are not our native plants.
So Iowa springs are for the tough plants.
They are indeed. Some of them just cannot adapt to the extremes we have of the springtime, of when the warm comes and when it's cold, and they're bouncing back and forth between it over a period of a week or two. And you'll notice that you can tell where the European plants have been introduced and are in our community. They'll be the first trees to come out in leaf and or flower. And the native plants just wait. The native plants have been adapted to be well aware that there are false alarms of when spring is really here and the cold is really done. And so the essentially the last trees to come out in leaf and in flower in our area would be the native plants. They don't make that mistake of putting all of the effort into putting on their summer finery and just to have it freeze.
They know better, right?
What are the native fruit plants? Native plums are the only ones I can think of. Those are native, aren't they?
There are native plums, and of course there are native crab apples as mm-hmm. well. So the apple is not an unknown thing to the Midwest, and Iowa has been very famous for apples at some time.
We're talking with climatologist Elwyn Taylor, and in wrapping up, Elwyn, could you please tell us the storm we experienced last week? Was it a blizzard?
Blizzard means that you have limited visibility because of either ground snow blowing or snow falling, and winds in the 30-mile-per-hour area, to over 35 generally. Yes, many places did have blizzard conditions. Not everyone. It wasn't a general blizzard that covered its whole storm area, but in many areas it was certainly qualified as a blizzard. Limited visibility because of blowing snow and winds up in the 35-mile-an-hour range.
Thank you so much for taking time to talk to us this morning, Elwyn, and we'll call you again. Is that okay?
I'll look forward to that.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye, Elwyn. Have a good day.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in central Iowa. Your hosts for today are Susan Franzen and Ursula Rudenberg.
We've been talking with climatologist Elwyn Taylor about the weather we've been experiencing and also trying to get a sense of what we can expect in the near future, and it doesn't sound like warm weather is right around the corner yet.
As we mentioned earlier, there was another unusual snowstorm in April of 1973. Leland Searles witnessed that storm, and he's joined us by phone from Des Moines to describe what he remembers about it. By the way, we first got introduced to Lee on Local Talk because he created and published the beautiful phenology calendar of the Raccoon River watershed, which we constantly refer to when planning our shows. Lee?
Good morning.
Good
morning. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, where were you in April 1973?
Well, that was quite the spring. At the time, I was carrying the Des Moines Tribune, which was the afternoon paper, and so it was my duty, my custom after school each day to walk to the drugstore where the papers were dropped off. This was in Lamoni in Decatur County, where I grew up, and that day when I got to the drugstore, there were no papers on the sidewalk for me to take on a route, and I had no news as to what the situation was. So I simply assumed that there wouldn't be any papers that day because of the snow, and that in fact was the case. In 2.5 years of delivering the Tribune, that was the only day that the papers did not come from Des Moines, the only day in that 2.5 years. That was quite a walk. I started in the center of Lamoni and walked 2 to 2.5 miles along Highway 69.
Did you enjoy the storm?
I think I was more worried than anything else because what would the customers say? And would I be in trouble, me personally, if I didn't deliver a paper that day?
How old were you?
I think I was 13. I got no complaints from customers. I was just a rather nervous teenager, as it turned out. They all knew what was going on.
Thank you for sharing that, Lee. We really appreciate very much your phonology calendar. We just love it and are really enjoying using it to enrich local talk. So thank you for joining us this morning.
Yes, thank you very much.
Okay, talk to you again soon.
Yes, bye-bye. Bye.
We're going to be playing a little bit of Marjorie's Song by Peter Ostrowski before we go on to our other stories. Our next story is from Mary Richards, who will tell us about what it was like to be in the country outside Nevada in April 1973 and four other blizzards.
Well, first of all, I will always be able to tell you the exact date of that blizzard because it was on my middle daughter's 10th birthday. So I know that it was the 7th of April of 1973. And we lived in Milford Township at the time on an acreage in the country surrounded by farmland with a triple row of windbreak giant pine trees to the north of the house, which did absolutely nothing to contain the snowdrifts. My most vivid memory of that storm is being out in front of the house after the storm, seeing the drifts that were up to the eaves of the house with green grass in between the drifts because the wind had blown so hard, it had just blown everything into drifts where there was something to stop the wind and left bare ground, green grass in this case, in between.
And you said it was your daughter's birthday. How did you celebrate her birthday? Was it a snow day? Was she happy?
You know, it must have been. I don't have any recall of that, but I'm sure she would remember.
Do you have any memory of when it hit? I've heard people went to work in Des Moines and in Ames and had to leave their cars and get home some other way because the snow was so bad?
Well, I certainly remember times like that when we lived in the country. Once when my younger daughter and I abandoned our car right outside Ames at the first dwelling there was, I decided there's no way we can get home. And another time that happened, but not with this particular storm. We were all at home, and so none of us were stranded anywhere.
Well, I have a question about when you did leave your cars. What did you do? Did you stay at the farmhouse, or did somebody give you a ride somehow?
Oh, no. You know, we were driving out of Ames, and when you get outside the lights of the city, and it's blowing very hard, you cannot see anything. You can't see in front of the car. We managed to stay on the road by me looking out the driver's window to see the edge of the road, and my daughter looking out the passenger side to make sure that we didn't go off the road on that direction. And when we got to the first house outside Ames, which in our case was the Penny's house, I turned into the driveway and I said, "We're staying here tonight." And so we did. I'll tell you another story that doesn't have anything to do with this blizzard, but does have to do with the blizzard. Our nearest neighbors, the Schmidts, had horses, and they were in Minneapolis for the weekend, and we were taking care of the horses when the blizzard hit and kept them there for an extra couple of days. I remember coming back from their house, the quarter of a mile up the gravel road, on my hands and knees, and watching to the side to make sure that I was watching the fence, because I would not have been able to get home otherwise. It would be really scary. I'm sure that if you were a pioneer in this country in a blizzard, it would be extremely frightening, life-threatening.
I think some of them didn't make it from the barn to the house.
That's right.
calling Monty Sesker, who's speaking to us from Cambridge, Iowa. Monty may be familiar to some of you as the editor of Wallace's Farmer for many years, and he lives on a century farm, at least five generations in his family. Is that right, Monty?
Yeah, that's correct. We received a Century Farm Award this summer at the Iowa State Fair. It marked about 130 years. We were a little late applying for it, but we did receive it.
So what was your experience?
As I recall, I think it started on a Sunday night, snowing, and the day before had been very warm and pleasant and unusually warm for that time of year, which I do know that it contributed to the actual snowfall. And on Monday, I guess it was, and decided not to go to work because of the threat of the blizzard, and we were around the kitchen window, and we lived just on the edge of Cambridge, and our barn was probably about 65, 70 yards from the house. And the snow had started blowing. The wind was at 50, 60 miles an hour, at least, I imagine. But you just couldn't see the barn at all. Once in a while, it let up, and you'd see a little shadow. And there was a windmill right in front of it, a tall old windmill. Kind of moved back and forth, and we were kind of laughing. We thought, boy, it could blow the windmill over. It was so strong. We wound up with about, the driveway was head high, I think, with snow. It had blown across, and the kids were home from school, and we had a teenager that was, I guess, about 13, and then one getting close to that age, and we kind of remember the phone started ringing in the morning, and after about five calls, none of them was for either Carolyn or I, all for the kids. I started counting phone calls, and but counted about 53 phone calls, and none of them were for either of us. So anyway, that's my recollection.
Okay. Well, thank you, Yana. And I know there's a little sequel to that. So can you see your barn today?
Yeah. In the early 90s, God struck the barn with lightning, and so now I can't see the barn either. So in both instances, the barn had disappeared.
Well, thank you so much for that story. And you and Carolyn have a good day.
Oh, thank you.
This is Local Talk, and we're talking about storms and how they affect the lives of people in our area. I remember I was speaking once with Jonathan Buffalo, who's with the Meskwaki Indians in the Tama settlement, and him making a remark about the ecosystem that we live in here. I remember him saying to me, you know, this is a dangerous environment that we live in. If you take away the electricity and the gas in the winter, this environment can kill you. And it's just kind of a level of respect that we're always kind of go back to in terms of what kind of environment we live with. And unfortunately, we're not being able to tell you these stories and tell you that the end is in sight.
Well, we still have some more stories, so we need to move on to...
So who's next?
Paul Wearson in Story City. Hi, Paul. Are you there?
I am here. Yes, I am.
Okay, and I know you have a town and country story, and I know there's a lot to tell.
Yeah, well, first of all, the blizzard of 73, it came on a Sunday night. I went to a meeting that night and barely got home. And the next morning, I worked at Job Service, which is now Workforce Development. And my job was downtown. I lived out on 82nd and Hickman. And by the morning, it was totally impassable. I looked out my window, and three cars were stalled and stuck on 82nd Street. And I thought, well, It may take time for the state of Iowa to have the courage to close down, but I'm not going to go downtown anyway. And I was vindicated by 10 o'clock because everything was shut down, and the people who did go downtown were stranded there for at least one day, sleeping in offices, some, of course, the hotels filled up. And I remember being hungry because I hadn't provisioned in food, and it was necessary for me to walk from 82nd Street up to 86th and Hickman, where there was a big doll store, and it really was a whiteout. It was a risky thing to do because you momentarily lost your bearings, and I just groped through the snow to get to that doll store on 86th Street. And when I entered in there, barely any staff was there. Now, not many people had made it to work. But what a marvelous clubby atmosphere it was. All these people were sort of having a camaraderie of coffee and donuts, and it was a marvelous experience. And when I look back, that really was a two-day affair in Des Moines, where after the snow ceased and we got about a foot of snow, the wind continued to blow for most of Tuesday, too. It didn't normalize in Des Moines until about Wednesday. And I remember looking down Hickman Road, which was a four-lane thoroughfare, and all I could see was a snowmobile trail because people were hauling the nurses to their shift change at Northwest Hospital. So the only people who moved were the people who had an absolute necessity to be there. And it was really shutdown of Des Moines for the better part of 3 days because, first of all, the wind didn't stop. Kids were skiing off their rooftops and right into the yard because the snow went right up to the eaves of the house. And it was a time of, well, the snowplows were all off the equipment. It was a freak storm early April 1973.
So one of the things I'm hearing is that the storm brought people together.
It did because, first of all, it was a snow day for everybody, so I'm sure families throughout Des Moines rediscovered their ability to just sit and be with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, but I did have a lot of friends who were stranded downtown, and they had all kinds of stories, too, because you had to put together a place to sleep for the night,
mm-hmm.
and not all the restaurants were open. It was literally chaos. It shows how a city can be paralyzed. You know?
Mm-hmm. Mother Nature getting the upper hand.
Well,
Paul, thank you so much for joining us today, and we look forward to having you come down and do more stuff with us soon down here at KHOI.
Well, I'm so happy we're building a studio.
It's beautiful.
It reminds me of my old radio days, and that will really give us new capability. You and Susan do a marvelous job in listening to the show today, and it is a great little show about, and so timely after our blizzard yesterday.
Well, thank you so much for the compliment, and we'll be looking forward to talking to you again. Next caller is Deb Mortfeldt, also from Story City. Deb was not in Story City in 1973, but she has a great story anyway. Deb, are you there now?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning. So, you were eager to tell your story when I talked to you yesterday.
Yes. Well, I figured out I was 15 years old, which, you know, you're not too worried about too many things when you're 15 years old, except when you get to drive. And I lived in Stories in Cedar Falls. I was a sophomore at Cedar Falls High School and lived out 12th Street on Union Road, kind of in a little housing development area. We lived in the big house with the big barn at the housing area. So it had been a farm before, but I remember it because we didn't have school for several days and didn't necessarily worry about not going being in school, I worried about not getting to see my friends. So the friends that were actually in the housing area and the neighbors who you only saw in the summertime, we all became very close again. And young children learned how to shovel their neighbors' driveways and sidewalks and just to get around, because the city did not come out but for one path out 12th Street. And so there was one path, and I'm sure it was just for emergency vehicles, because one time we tried to get on it and met a car, and one of the cars had to back up all the way because there was only one path. And there was snow on either side, where there was drifting, but where the snowplow had gone through. So there was, on either side of the road, it was like a tunnel of snow, and it was probably 6 to 8 feet. It was over the cars. So it was quite impressive being in a snow tunnel like that, and just far enough further north and far enough further west that we probably had a little bit different snow than we had, than they had down here in what we called the south part of Iowa,
Deb,
Des Moines.
Deb, what do you remember feeling about this?
I thought, you know, I had just different responsibilities, or lack thereof, as than I would now, as having children or having a husband that's out working in it. My dad was an engineer for Deere's, and he was out of town, as he usually was, and so I wasn't worried about his safety in traveling. Honestly, you know, when you're a 15-year-old girl and you don't have to be outside like a farm boy would need to be, making sure that the livestock is safe and waters are working and stuff is being moved around so animals can be fed. My responsibilities were very unserious when it came to an event like this that could have horrible consequences, you know. But the phone worked, you know, and that was a lifeline to friends and neighbors and those who had other needs. Certainly my mom was concerned about my 95-year-old grandmother, but once we found out that everyone was taken care of, it was just having fun again. And you know, when you're 15, you kind of got out of playing in the snow, but everybody got into playing in the snow. And we actually had one of the only snowmobiles back then, my dad being the engineer with extra toys. We had a snowmobile with a sled on the back. So this was a perfect snow for snowmobiles.
So it sounds like what you remember this as being beautiful and fun.
I do. I have a fun memory of it. In fact, I put on my Facebook last night that I was going to be talking about this today. I had several friends that said, I remember that. I remember that. I remember you as a sophomore. I remember that. And so, just like you said, you know, a lot of us remember where we were when Kennedy was shot and on 9/11. There are a lot of us here in Iowa that remember this snowstorm. I couldn't have told you the date. Like, I'm so impressed how people have remembered the date. I couldn't have remembered that. I'm sure we did not go to school up in Cedar Falls for probably at least 4 days, because so much of that school system is built on the busing going around. I don't know, maybe the kids in town had to have school. You know, it's not like we had websites to go through to find out anything like we do now. So,
well, Deb, thank you for joining us.
Yes,
and sharing.
Yes,
that beauty fun aspect of winter. We're kind of heading into the end of the show. This is Local Talk, and we're talking about storms and how they've been affecting people in our area. We've been calling residents who remember one storm in particular, the storm of April 1973.
Oh,
Well, this is Local Talk, and we're talking about storms and how they've been affecting people in our area. We've been calling residents who remember one storm in particular, the storm of April 1973. I think we're going to be hearing from Shirley Shaw, who's from Ames. She had a reaction to that storm that she wanted to share.
Shirley, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay. Well, how did you feel about the storm of April 1973?
Oh, well, I hate to talk on public radio about the power of prayer, but the situation was we were coming home the Sunday night, the night before, from a very intense, long weekend, church-sponsored weekend. And I was so tired, and all I could think of was, how am I going to go to work tomorrow and lecture? And so I said, oh, God, if there's anything you can do to make it possible for me to stay home. And I woke up the next morning, and look what happened. 17 inches of snow. I thought my husband was kidding me when he said, you don't have to go to work today.
Well, prayers were answered.
That's instant gratification. Thank you so much for sharing that. Thank you so much.
Okay.
This
sure.
is
bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg, and I'm here with Susan Franson. And we've been trying to say our last goodbyes to winter with some winter stories from local residents from their own lives.
We also heard from climatologist Elwin Taylor. It was very interesting to hear him say that the native Iowa plants are the last plants to grow green in the spring to avoid being frozen, since as native plants, they are adapted to harsh weather.
Well, Deb Niehoff has joined us here in the studio. Hi, Deb.
Good morning.
Welcome. Deb is the executive director of NAMI Central Iowa. NAMI stands for National Alliance for Mental Illness. We're featuring NAMI this month at KHOI in our Community Service Appreciation Program, so we're delighted to have you here with us. But you're also here for another reason, right, Deb?
I am. We will be co-hosting a trivia night on March 8th with KHOI, and we're really excited about doing this together. It's going to be Saturday, March 8th. Doors open at 6 o'clock, and trivia begins at 6:30. And we're going to have trivia at the Boys and Girls Club at 210 South 5th Street in Ames. And everyone is welcome. Businesses, organizations, clubs, group of friends, just come out for a night of fun.
This is a fundraiser for KHOI and NAMI. It's a partnership, right?
It is.
And
yes.
We'll be selling tables, and it'll be $100 a table. And each table will have up to 8 contestants.
Right.
And there'll also be prizes for the winners, and there'll be a gourmet dessert auction.
I'm looking forward to that.
People all over town are making desserts, including Susan here is going to make one. And Susan's a really good cook, so
And Ursula is going to make one, and she had a sample yesterday, so I can vouch for it. It's beautiful chocolate.
Turned out a Google Hop. Chocolate Google Hop. So, Deb, let's talk about NAMI for a minute. Could you give us a brief description of what NAMI does?
Sure. NAMI is a nonprofit, and our mission is to provide support and education and advocacy for individuals living with mental illness and for their family members.
This is a national organization?
It is. It's a national organization. We are one of over 1,000 local affiliates.
So tell us, how did NAMI get started here in Ames? When did it start?
It started over 30 years ago. It was actually a few parents, each of who had children with schizophrenia, who found each other and found out how important the support was of someone who understood what you were going through. And as they were supporting each other, they thought, why don't we open this up to more people? And it was about this same time that the national group got started. A group of women in Wisconsin were doing the same thing. So our local group and the national group kind of followed the same path, that as more people found out about it, found out about the support that was available, and then started talking to their legislators about poor conditions for individuals living with mental illness and trying to better their lives, things just grew from there.
So when these people originally got together, what were they doing together?
Well, I wasn't there, so as far as I know, they were sharing their own stories and challenges and giving just individual support, but then they would also bring in speakers. They would bring in people, psychologists or people from the university, anyone that could give them more information and education about the illnesses themselves.
Mm-hmm. And NAMI is a nonprofit, 501c3, like KHOI, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Uh-huh. So the Central Iowa chapter, that's managed locally?
Yes, yes. Pretty much we're involved with individuals in Story County, but people come from distances because there is not a NAMI in every county here. And so when we offer our educational programs, we have people come from quite a range of places, especially north.
So if there's somebody listening who has mental illness and needs help, what would you say to them?
Well, if they need help in terms of diagnosis, I would say that they should contact, they can start with their family doctor if they feel most comfortable and explain what they're experiencing, and the family doctor may refer them to a psychiatrist or the community mental health center. If it's someone that just needs some support and some people who understand what they're going through, I would invite them to come to our Mental Health Wellness Center. We have one that's open on weekday afternoons, and it's a place where we offer programming, whole health programming for mental health recovery.
And where are you located?
We are downtown in the Ames Historical Society building, which is 416 Douglas, and we're upstairs in Suite 305.
And if somebody comes there, what can they expect?
They can expect a warm welcome. The people who come there regularly are just always really, really welcoming of new people. They can just come in and look around, meet people, pick up a calendar of the month's events, if that's all they want to do. Or they can sit down, have a cup of tea, and participate in whatever's going on that day. Different days, different activities. We have art groups, writing groups, a support group every Thursday. A lot of different activities, exercise. We have chair yoga and Pilates groups.
Mm-hmm. Deb, why do you do this?
I do this because I have a family member living with mental illness. And when this diagnosis was made almost 15 years ago now, we knew nothing. And we knew that we needed support. And we were directed to a NAMI, an educational program that was going on in the community. And I was just blessed to be able to talk to other parents who were a little further down the road with the same situation, so that they could tell me kind of what to expect, the positives, the realities of mental illness. And at that point, I became involved just as a volunteer, and then 6.5 years ago, I came on as executive director.
Do you have a lot of volunteers?
We do, yes. Mainly, we have volunteers who run our programs. Everything that's NAMI related, our support groups, our educational classes, are all run by what we call peers. So if it's a group for family members, then the people who facilitate it are family members themselves who have gone for training. The state provides training. If it's a group for individuals living with mental illness, it's led by people who have mental illness. So it's always someone who understands the situation that you're in.
From the inside.
Exactly. Yeah.
How have you found your experience working there? Have you gotten a lot out of it?
I have. I think any nonprofit, any human services group, you have challenges and you have rewards. And of course, the rewards are when you see people breathing that sigh of relief that someone finally understands. When you hear people say, this support group, I come to it every week because it's what keeps me going through the week. When you hear people after taking a family-to-family class, which is our 12-week educational class, say, I wish I had had this sooner. It really helps me understand my loved one. Those are the rewards. The challenges are the challenges that are nationwide. especially here in Iowa, we don't have enough psychiatrists. And so when we say what you really need to do is see a psychiatrist, and they come back and say, first time I can get in is April, you know, that's really concerning. Or when someone needs to go to the hospital and the beds are full here and they need to be transported to the Quad Cities or to Council Bluffs, that's really difficult. So just dealing with the mental health system and the gaps in it is frustrating.
And NAMI, does NAMI advocate for improvement in mental health? And
the national group definitely does. They have lobbyists, and they have the president's ear, really.
He's allocated quite a bit of funds towards.
He has. Mm-hmm. He has. He gets it. Yeah. And we're very, very thankful for that. Here we do as much advocating as we can. Like, we were at the legislative wake up this past week for the League of Women Voters. We do what we can. I mean, we can talk to legislators and we can tell them our stories, which is what NAMI particularly encourages us to do.
Well, Deb, funds raised by Ames Trivia Night. What is the money going to be used for?
Well, the money will be used for our ongoing expenses to provide our programs. Like I said, we have educational classes, we have the Mental Health Wellness Center, we have support groups, and we really, really strongly feel we don't want any hoops people have to jump through in order to get help. We're the one place that people can come and get started right away. But we have rent to pay and
That's
utilities
right.
to pay, and these kinds of fundraisers help us to be able to keep things going.
KHOI will use the money to operate the station. We also have rent to pay and astronomical electrical bills. That's what the money here will be used for, was the operating expenses for KHOI. And so let's talk Trivia Night again real quickly, so we make sure that everybody feels invited. We are inviting you, the listener, to join us on March 8th. The door opens at 6 p.m. Trivia begins at 6:30. Bring your brains, bring your friends. One table costs $100, and it can be divided between up to 8 players. And this will be at the Boys and Girls Club, which is 210 South 5th Street, which is where the old bowling alley used to be, right? Down on near Duff?
I went to a trivia night a few years ago, and it was a blast.
It's a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun,
yeah,
yes.
This is a great way to shake off the cold, to, you know, get together with some friends. We do encourage you to dress up. In fact, there will be a prize for the team with the best name and the best costumes. Is that right, Deb?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You will get your own table. We invite you to bring dinner. I hear some people bring theme dinners, which is really awesome. And there will be gourmet desserts. There will be an auction for the gourmet desserts.
Mm-hmm.
We will be asking, I think, around 10 or 12 rounds of trivia questions. And the team that wins gets a $200 prize plus a free table at the next Ames Trivia Night. It's going to be a night of fun as well as fundraising.
It really will. We had one last year, and we were just all blown away at how much everyone enjoyed it. I mean, there are times when you feel really dumb because you just don't even know what the question means, much less the answer. And then times that you can feel very smart because some little bit of trivia you knew and no one else did.
Well, the other thing that's fun is when you are on a team, you really enjoy the knowledge of your teammates, mm-hmm. and you don't have to feel, oh, I can't answer anything. Oh, I can't answer this question, because you can figure it out together. Mm-hmm. And I think team trivia is really a different kind of game than the individual trivia that you usually play.
We were asked to do a bunch of questions about radio, so we contribute a lot of radio trivia.
Okay.
To register online, there is a website, getmeregistered.com/AmesTrivia. We're also going to put a link on our homepage at khoifm.org to register online. Also, you can register by phone, 515-292-2878. 515-292-2878. That's the number here at the radio station. So please give us a call, register. We really, really want you to join us. It's a we also need the money. KHOI and NAMI need the money. And this is a really enjoyable way to do this. We're getting better and better at raising money, but we're also getting better at making sure we have fun. So thank you so much for joining us, Deb. And why don't you stay while we finish out the show?
Thank you.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Today, we have been all about the winter. Since March comes in like a lion and goes out like a lamb, we are trying to move things along by giving winter his due in hopes that he will see it as a friendly send-off. We spoke with climatologist Elwin Taylor about the blizzard conditions we experienced last week and his predictions for this week.
We also heard winter stories from local residents, including Leland Searles from Des Moines, Mary Richards from Ames, Mondi Sesker from Cambridge, Paul Wearson and Deb Mortveld from Story City, and Shirley Shaw from Ames.
Deb Niehoff is here with us today, also representing NAMI Central Iowa, the National Alliance for Mental Illness, and helping us get this invitation out to you, the KHOI listener, about Ames Trivia Night, a night of friendship, laughter, fun, and great food that will help both KHOI and NAMI.
Please join us for Trivia Night on the night of March 8th. You can find a link for registering online at khoifm.org. And I think our webmaster is going to put it up there today, so if you don't find it this morning, please go back in the evening or afternoon. That's khoifm.org. Or you can call us to register by phone at 292-2878. That's 292-2878.
Local Talk is engineered by Richard Morrison and Becca Brown. Music you heard today included Marjorie's Song by Peter Oshushko and also Northern Lights by Reeks Estenbalds.
Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kay Chelly.
You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, and see the listings of our past guests and resource contact information. You will also find lists of our guests and contact information to the organizations as we speak with them, and other sources mentioned in our shows. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends.
Also, as we go out, we want to give a shout out to KURE. Student Radio, who is also going to have their own trivia thing going on March 7th and 8th, right, Becca?
Yeah, it's called Collider Quiz. It happens every year, and this year is the 47th annual Collider Quiz event, and it's full of crazy montages and questions of all the random sorts, like trying to find an obscure license plate number in a movie, and it's pretty great. Lots of food, and it's 26 hours, and I will be trying to marathon the whole thing.
So shout out to KURE. Good luck with your marathon. And to top it off, guys, come and join us at Ames Trivia Night at the Boys and Girls Club. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. And if you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us at 292-2878, 292-2878, or contact us through our website. Thank you for listening, and please join us on March 8th for Trivia Night to support KHOI and NAMI Central Iowa.
Your participation as audience is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.